Hello, hello, hello. Howdy. How are you guys doing today? Yeah? Hello? Hello? Ooh, that's sad. Let's try it one more time. I need you. I know you were out partying last night. This is, somebody referred to this as the hangover session, so need some energy here. Hello? Thank you. Okay, so this is going to be an interactive session. We'll try and be as interactive. I'm going to go through some stuff. I've got a very loose structure for this talk, and it's designed to, you know, field questions and comments. So, you know, just shout them out. I'll try and repeat them for folks who are recording this. So this is PowerShell for Beginners. This is a variation of a talk I did with Don Jones at TechEd Orlando called the PowerShell Crash Course. So put your seatbelt on. How many of you are actively using PowerShell today? Okay, so this is PowerShell for beginners. So you guys don't get to say too basic, okay? Other people you can, but you guys, you know PowerShell. Now, if you know PowerShell, you know, I might show you some tech. You know, if you pepper this with some things that you might not have seen before, and certainly give you some thinking behind what we do. But certainly, if you are a PowerShell user, don't go asking like the esoteric edge questions. You know, we have advanced PowerShell, and you can ask them there. But this is for the beginner's course, so don't ask the you know really esoteric things like how do you set up a PS session configuration file for delegated administration. Not this course. Okay, so. It's going to be very heavy on demo. In fact, I think there's going to be two or three slides. So this is all about trying to get you up to speed and running on PowerShell as quickly as possible. The vast majority of what you're going to see here today works with what you have right now. It works with PowerShell version 3. And for those of you who don't use PowerShell, PowerShell version 3 ships in Windows 7 and Windows Server 2008 R2, and it's available down level N-2 releases. So it's available on XP and Vista, and it's available on 2003 and 2008. Okay, but I will show you some of the new things that are coming, some of the new PowerShell V3 things, and in fact, I'll be using the PowerShell V3 tools to show you a bunch of things that will run in PowerShell version 2. And I'll try and be clear about where we are with each. That is to say, when I highlight something in V3, I'll try and make it clear. And indeed, feel free to ask questions. I got a lot of material. Basically, the model is I'm just going to go until we run out of time, and then we're going to stop. So it's your session. So who am I? I'm Jeffrey Snover, a distinguished engineer. I'm the lead architect for Windows Server, and I was also the original architect for Windows PowerShell. And of course, I did this session with Don Jones again in Florida. Don is a superstar. Trainer and author, and he's got a very good book if you're just coming up to speed on PowerShell called PowerShell in a Month of Lunches. And I really like Don's approach to the problem because basically he's saying, hey, and we've seen, though, everybody in the community has seen this, folks who say, I got to learn PowerShell. I went to TechEd and I heard about PowerShell. I'm going to learn PowerShell. So I've allocated a day and I'm just going to muscle through it. And that doesn't really work. What you want to do is you want to spend, like what he says, is spend your lunch hour every day for a month and you'll pretty much be a very competent PowerShell scripter. And that's a very good approach. So there you go. So with that, that's the end of that concludes my talk. Okay. So here we go. Let's see. Yeah, fine. So PowerShell. Now, lots of different ways. You know, PowerShell's like love, right? It means different things to different people. So too, PowerShell. For the advanced people and developers, they'll think PowerShell is this distributed automation engine with a set of APIs with callbacks and delegated administration. If you're a beginner to PowerShell, for you, PowerShell is a command line interface. Okay? Now, how many of you have ever done the following? Ping. Anybody know how to use ping? Ping, 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 ping. You are all PowerShell users. You are all competent. You are all qualified. You can put PowerShell on your resume, okay? Because here, I'll say localhost, ping localhost, okay? Yeah? And now I can come here and I can say, ping local host. Okay, so PowerShell is a command line shell. Everything that you can do in command.exe, most of the things you can do in command.exe, you can also do in PowerShell. Okay, but it goes beyond that, right? So let's be clear. So you can run calc, you can run notepad, right? So it's a command line interface, okay? But it's obviously much more than that as well. It is built upon .NET, right? PowerShell, the philosophy here is it's a command line interface, and we try and make the entire system manageable to you or presented to you as a series of high-level task-oriented abstractions, okay? That is the heart of PowerShell, high-level task-oriented abstractions. We are trying to build for you a world where you can think about what you want, you can type it, and you get it. That's the basic model. Now, you will have to learn some syntax, right? There's a dollar sign underbar and a squiggle bracket. You'll have to learn some syntax. But once you learn that syntax, then you'll be able to think, type, and get what you want. Okay? So that's where we're going. And again, this is all built upon .NET. So we use .NET reflection technology, high tech, cool stuff. And what that means is that if there's ever a commandlet, what we call these high-level task-oriented abstractions. We call them commandlets. If there's a commandlet that doesn't do what you want, you can then reach down to the underlying .NET and get at it. Now, if you're a beginner, you're probably thinking, why would I ever want to do that? And the answer is, you don't need to. But there are some advanced scripters here who will do that, and then they can produce high-level task-oriented abstractions for you. So, most important thing about PowerShell is it's discoverable, okay? So indeed, a lot of people say, how do I get started with PowerShell? Don Jones's book is great. However, you know, remember, we're producing a world where you think about what you want, you type it, and you get it. So if you want help, what would you type? I like that guy. You type help. And guess what? You'd wait, and then you'd get help. Okay? So it's as simple as that. You think, you type, you get. Now, if you're a Unix guy, what would you think? Question mark. Whack. No. No, you'd say man. You'd say man. And man works as well. Okay? So we've got aliases for that as well. Okay? So so we've got help. Now, if I said, imagine I want to get help on get process. I'd say get help on get process. And there we see the help for get process. Gives you the name, gives you a synopsis of what's going on, and then it shows you the syntax. Get process, these angle brackets means that's optional. So optionally, you can provide the name, and optionally, you say dash name in the name. So let's see what that actually means. What that actually means is get process, and those angle brackets, that means it's optional, which means I should be able to just type this. Ah, and it works. But then there were angle brackets. I could have said name. I typed that, and it works. And then it also said that this name was optional. So I could just type that, and that works. And that all came from looking at the help doc. And that's what those brackets mean. Excuse me. That's what these brackets mean. These brackets mean that they're optional. Okay? So the help system is your friend. There's lots of help. In fact, there is help about. There's a rich set of help topics. Okay? So look here. There is a rich set of help topics. There's help about alias, about arithmetic operators, about automatic variables, about individual things. There's lots of documentation built right in, so you go ahead and use that. Now, we've made a change in version 3. In version 2, we shipped with the help. In version 3, we ship with the help off by default, which is to say not installed by default. And the problem there was that with version 2, we shipped the help, And then as we found errors in the help, or you told us, hey, that doesn't make sense, I don't understand that, what about this, what about that, we would update the help, and then the answer was, hey, and just hang in there a couple years, we'll update the help, and in version 3 we'll have that documentation problem fixed. And we thought, well, there's got to be a better way to do that. And so we now update the help on a very regular basis. In fact, the other week, someone complained about the help, and 3 days later, the new help was up online. And so now what you can do is you just say, update help, and you give the module name. I forget what. I could say star. And what we will do is we will go online, find all the help, and downline load it. Now, you might say, well, that's great, but what about for systems that aren't connected to the internet? Hey, guess what? We think about these things. And the answer is, I guarantee you, somebody's connected to the internet somewhere. And so what you can do is you can update this help, save it off to either a file share or a USB disk, and then on those other computers that aren't connected to the internet for security reasons typically, you can say update the help from that source. Okay? So that's what update help is all about. By the way, the other reason is that we now draw this distinction between PowerShell as a user experience and PowerShell as infrastructure, as management infrastructure. And as management infrastructure, the help is not helpful. The help just consumes resources. So you want the help where you're going to use it, which is to say, as a user experience. And so that's typically going to be your client boxes. Okay. So we got a lot of help, so I'm going to cancel that for a second. Now, later I'll show you how if you don't have help, you still have help. In fact, let me show you that right now. So let's say I build myself a function test help, and I say I got parameter $name. Yeah, define that, and then I say okay, get help on test help, and you see even though we don't have a help file, we can still give a certain amount of help because it's metadata driven. Okay? So even when there is no help, there's still help. You still have help. Okay? Now, PowerShell, as I mentioned, is a command line interface built upon .NET, and it is snappable, which is to say it has an extension framework. So when you want to run the firewall commands are bundled up in a module for firewall commands. And then in version 2, you've got to import that module before you can use the commandlets. Everybody use that? In version 3, you no longer have to do that. So let me show you. There are these things called modules. So I'll say get module. And these are the ones shows me the modules that I have, okay? But then if I was to say get SMB share, okay? So that I run, and if I do get module again, notice that it has loaded the SMB share module. Notice it's not here. Okay, so that means two things. In version 3, you no longer have to worry about import module. What we do is when you start a PowerShell, behind the scenes, we go back and we look at your module path, which is all the modules in your system. And in the background, we dynamically load them up, sniff them, find what's there. We find all the commands and we find out where they're located. And then when you want to invoke it, you just invoke it and we'll dynamically load that module for you. So good stuff. Okay. Now, notice that there's a very strong model to this, right? PowerShell's not just this random, you know. By the way, how many people have a Unix background? Okay, yeah, okay, good, a few. In Unix, it's kind of random, right? It sort of looks like somebody sat on the keyboard to design the commandlets, like awk. What the heck's an awk and a grep and a sed? And you'll notice in PowerShell, that's not at all the case. In PowerShell, we've got a very strong opinion about this high-level task-oriented abstraction, right? Because we want to be able to think, type, and get what you want, right? So that's why there's very strong verb-noun naming, okay? So that's why I say get, process. I can say get. Well, here, let's say get. And then say tab. Look at all the things. There's all these gets. Right? Lots and lots and lots. Okay? So, in fact, one of those is get verb. Okay, so this is showing you all the verbs in the system. Okay, and if you want to say, well, geez, how many are there? You'd like to measure how many there are. You can say get verb pipe to measure. And there are 98 verbs. And the point there is that, again, you're going to learn what those verbs are. And having learned what those verbs are, then you can think about what you want, type them, and get them. Okay, so we've got a very strong model here. Now, this extends to the commands themselves. Okay, so let me say get command. And you get all the commandlets. But the commands, we also are very strong on what the parameters should be. Okay, so if you're going to write a command and you want to talk to a remote computer, you use dash computer name. You don't use dash server or dash machine or dash node or dash IP address. You use dash computer name. So imagine you wanted to get all the commands that had a parameter dash computer name. How would you do that? Oh, you guys really drank too much. Okay, let's try it again. If you want to get all the commands that have a parameter dash computer name, how would you do that? I'll show you. Forget it. You guys just rest. Just like soak it in. By the way, who won the game last night? Spain? Oh, my test manager is going to be a very happy guy. So if you wanted to get the commands that had a parameter name, computer name, and those are all the parameter, all the commands that have a parameter computer name, right? And so let's see if that's true. I could say get service dash computer name. Okay? So again, I'm really serious about this. You will learn the syntax, you will learn the verbs, and there's a little, you know, you gotta join the club. But then after that, you think about what you want, you type it, and you get it. That's what we're all about. Now, sometimes you're gonna get, there'll be little hiccups, and you're just gonna have to acknowledge those hiccups and then move past them and learn them. So for instance, imagine you wanted to get the firewall. How would you do that? You. How do you do it? Wrong. That's what you'd think. Very good guess, but not quite. So in fact, get command, and I know it's something to do with firewall, right? It's something to get, something to do with firewall. Okay? And notice, oh, there's get firewall rule, get firewall profile. Okay, so they're different nouns. Okay, that's good. But then notice we put a net in front of them. Okay? We call this a prefix. Now, why do we have this prefix? By the way, this is one of those things you just kind of have to learn and remember and get it. But notice, you know, we said get command, get star firewall. It's very easy to find. Right? Wildcards are your friend, by the way. That star there, that's a wildcard. It expands things. So wildcards are your friends. So why do we have these prefixes? And the answer is that imagine the case that you have a user, the noun is user, okay? Well, chances are there's a SQL user, there's an AD user, there's a Windows user, there's a SAP user, etc. So if the command was just get user, then there'd be a collision. Now, how would you deal with a collision? And the answer is, yeah, it's very easy, okay? So let's do get process, get command, get process. Okay, oh, let's do this. Okay, see this module name here? That's the container for the commandlet. And the reality is that, let's see where to go here. This is the commandlet, get process. That is the true name of the commandlet. The true name of the commandlet is not get process. The true name of the commandlet is microsoft.powershell.management/get process. Just to prove it, LSASS. Okay, now, who wants to type that all the time? Okay, and so the answer is, if you ever have a collision, that's what you have to type. So obviously, we want to avoid collisions. And so that's what this prefix is all about, this prefix. And we did some study, you know, back of the envelope calculations. And basically, what we tell people is, hey, when you're delivering your stuff, pick a prefix code, which is 2 to 5 characters long, and put that in front of all your nouns so that they don't ever collide with one another. Or say they don't, it's not that they don't ever collide, but you minimize the times that they're ever going to collide, because if they do collide, you got to start programming like this. Now, let's talk about that. At some point, you might have to do this, and you might say, well, that's really horrible. I'd like to be able to, like, I'd like to not do that. I'd like to have an alias for that. So how might you, like, set an alias for that? You, right there. What's the answer? Come on. Shout it out. Oh, come on. Work with me. Oh, God. Okay. You, how would you set an alias? Oh, I like this guy. Okay. This is a much better side of the room than that. Set an alias. So what you do is you'd say set an alias, and you'd say, oh, well, the name I'd like to do, let's see, my get process, and the value I'd like to be this long thing. Okay? What did I say there? Oh, sorry. Can't give the value. Okay? So now I've got this alias, and I can just use the alias. Okay, and so that alias expands. And if you wanted to get all the aliases, I'm not even going to ask you guys. There you go. You get all the aliases. Okay, so it's a nice buildable world, nice discoverable world. I want to stress this think, type, get. And again, back to the help, right? So the help is an illusion. Like much of PowerShell, we lie or trick you all the time. So this, let's do this one. Sorry, get help, get process. Okay? So what you see here looks like the help file. It looks like you took ASCII text and burped it out on the screen. But that's not really the case. What's really the case is when you do get help, you get a help object, and then we render the help object as text. Okay, that seems like an esoteric distinction, but it's actually a very important distinction, because we render the object as text for what we think is the most appropriate thing. So here we're showing you what we think most people are going to want when they want help. But the reality is that there's quite a bit more. So you can do things like, you can say, get help, get process, minus full. And here, look at this. Look at this. There's a lot of stuff there. So you see the beginnings, right? The synopsis, the syntax. Yeah, it's good stuff. The description. And look here. Now, parameters, you get full description of the parameter. Is it required? No. Is its position? Yes. Is it has a default value? Yes. Okay, so there's lots of information about each one of the parameters. Does it have inputs? Oh, it can take a system diagnostic process. Talk about that later. What will it output? Okay. And then notes. Oh, here's some notes about this thing. Handles. That's the number of handles the process has open. So it describes things. And then examples. Now, examples are the way most people learn PowerShell. Like, hey, you know, how do you do that? That's not quite what I want. I want to change it and do this. So what's really useful is get help minus example. And here we're showing you just the examples. Okay, get process, and here are all the examples. Okay, so then you take a look at that and you say, oh, well, what about that? Cut, paste, voila. Okay, so I'm teaching you, you know, what I hope you get out of this lesson isn't any particular thing, but rather how to think about working with PowerShell and thus what to do. Now, with this one, this turns out to be a really fun thing because it makes a point. But what is that number? Is that 200,000? Is that 2 million? Is that 20 million? Does anybody guesses? No, I have no clue. I have no clue. I have no idea what that is. And why should you? Like, it turns out, anyway, why should you? So in reality, you can now say, hey, what about those things whose working set is greater than 20 megabytes? Ah, it probably was 20 megabytes. Okay, so look at that, 20 megabytes. Okay, hey, is that true? Well, let's find out. 1 KB, yeah, that looks right. 1 MB, yeah, that looks right. 1 GB, oh, 1 GB, 1 TB. Okay, 1 KB plus 2 MB plus 3 GB plus 4 TB. Okay? Admin math. By the way, is this correct? Can you check my math for me? Check that. I think it's right. Okay. So this is admin math. The point I'm making here is we design this for the people in this room, right? There are people in this room, when they see that 2,000, right, what the, or 20 million, you're like, you're going to look at this and you're just like, what the heck is that number, right? And you don't think in terms of those numbers. You think in terms of, hey, 20 megabytes, 30 gigabytes, blah, blah, blah. By the way, also, 0.5 KB. Whoop, whoop. So it's a lot of fun stuff in this. But the point I want to make here is that we designed this for you. Again, that's the way you're going to think. So in general, if you're thinking like an IT pro, you're going to be able to think about things, type them, and get them. Okay? So again, now I mentioned this updatable help. So do we use Windows Update? And the answer is no, we don't use Windows Update. Windows Update is for code. We use an alternate mechanism, and it's for content. Because the deal there is that with code, there's a very rigorous process to make sure, very rigorous and heavyweight process to make any changes to code on all the systems on Earth. However, if we just want to update the help, we can do that very quickly and very light. So we use an alternate mechanism for that. By the way, you can use the same mechanism. If there are any developers in the room, are there developers in the room? Oh, wonderful, wonderful, my people. So if you're a developer, you can write your own commandlets and you can point to a URL for where to update the help and we'll go get the help from there. So you can use exactly the same mechanism that we're using. Okay, so now let's get to the heart of PowerShell. The heart of PowerShell is the pipeline, okay? So PowerShell started, really, when one day I sat down and asked a bunch of dumb questions. Okay, this is the heart of Unix administration, Unix management. A pipe to B, pipe to C. And I sat down and I asked myself, well, geez, it's wildly successful. Why do people do this? Why are they using this pattern over and over and over again? And I realized that, the reason you do that is because A doesn't do what you want it to do. Seems kind of stupid and obvious. But I asked myself, why doesn't A do what you want it to do? And here, there's a traditional Unix answer. And the traditional Unix answer is, dude, that's the model. In Unix, you have a toolbox approach. You build small, discrete tools with a well-defined focus, and then you compose them together to solve big problems. Now, why is this such a powerful approach? And the answer is it contrasts against a scenario-driven approach. A scenario-driven approach says, hey, I'm going to spend a couple days with you. I'm going to see what you do. I'm going to find out exactly what your job is, and then I'm going to build you a tool so that you can do that job. And the problem with that is it works really nice for the moment that it works. Because the problem is, 30 minutes after I leave your office, your scenario changes, right? You got reorganized, and now you work for this guy, and this guy says, nah, we're not doing it that way anymore. We're going to do it this way. Or the technology changes, or you have a different environment. So the scenarios are always changing. So when you build fixed scenario tools, often they don't have a good dynamic range. So the toolkit approach allows you to be very dynamic. I got a novel problem? Hey, that's fine. I just compose a solution. So that's the traditional answer. But I came up with another answer. And the other answer is, why doesn't A do what you want it to do? And the problem is, the reason is that A gets a set of objects, it processes those objects, and it outputs the results, typically as text. Okay? So when we say A doesn't do what we want it to do, what we're really saying is I got the wrong objects, or I process them the wrong way, or I output them to text as the wrong way. Okay? Because otherwise, you just type A. So one of those things wasn't what you want. So here's the problem. In Unix, the model here is you take that text, piping it to B and C is really the process of taking that text to reverse engineer your way back to those original objects to do one of those steps differently. Hey, I'm going to parse the text and I'm going to get a different set of objects. I'm going to parse the text and I'm going to process it differently. I'm going to parse the text and I'm going to output the objects differently. But in reality, parsing text is really hard and really horrible, right? This is, you Unix guys will get this, other people won't. In Unix, we call this prayer-based parsing, right? You cut off three lines, or is it four? You go over 27 columns, or is it 26? Or is there a tab there? Oh, no. And then you cut how many wide, and then you convert it to an integer. I mean, it's just horrible. The fact that it works at all is just a miracle. But it's really loose and sloppy. And you do that, and it's really, that's the heart of it. And so what I said was, well, that's great, but we can do better. And in fact, let's put the pipeline here. And by putting the pipeline there, we have a pipeline of objects, and we operate on those objects, and we only output text when we want text. In most of the cases, we don't want text. Okay, so the point is it's an object pipeline and it makes things dramatically, dramatically simpler. Okay, so let's take a look at this. So get process. Okay. Now, imagine I wanted to get all the process names. If I had to parse text, I'd have to say, okay, let's see, I want to cut off 1, 2, 3 lines. I want to cut off the first three lines, and then I'm going to go over how many lines. Holy schmoly, I have no idea. Any guesses? Oh, here's a trick. You'll like this one. Check this one out. Again, just random PowerShell trick. I do this way. I do space, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Okay, that's a string, and we do string math. Okay, so there you go. So that tells me, let's see, bring this down here. Oh, it doesn't go down. So that's somewhere like here. And then I say that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So that's like 58 columns. Okay. This is horrible, right? So, but in fact, what do? Right? You wanted to say get process. And what do we say? Well, I wanted to select the process name. Okay, let's try that again. I'll do it with wildcards, make it easy. I just wanted to select the process name, okay? So you didn't have to cut off three lines. You didn't have to figure out whether there's 58 columns or not. You just get it, right? And then you said, okay, well, get process. Hey, I'd like to get those, right, where the working set size is greater than a 1 megabyte. Well, get process where working set greater than 1 megabyte. Well, that's too big. Let's do 10 megabytes. Oh, that's too big. Let's do 30 megabytes. Okay? So think about that. That's pretty easy stuff. And then you might say, well, that's great, except I got too much stuff there. Really, all I wanted was I wanted to format it as a table, but I don't want all those columns, right? I wanted to format it as a table, and I want to use the properties process name and ID and working set. Oh, that's great, except it's kind of formatted odd. I'd really like to change those columns so that they were all like sized properly. I'd really like to auto-size it. Oh, well, that's pretty nice. Okay, so pipelines of objects allow you facilitate this think, type, get world, right? You think about what you want, you type it, and you get it, okay? Now, for those of you learning PowerShell, there's an easier way. Because in the beginning there, that dollar sign underbar, you know, squiggle, dollar sign underbar, blah, 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 that's something you just have to learn. And in PowerShell version 3, there's a new way to get it. Now, it turns out that the language designer, Bruce Payat and Jim Truer, superstar guys, they picked this dollar sign underbar because it's actually a Unix-ism. You guys in Unix love that thing. Windows guys, not so much. And the model here was that, you know, you've got the pipeline character, that pipe, and the idea is that when the object comes through the pipeline, it knocks it down, and so then it's dollar sign underbar. like literally, this was the explanation. Dollar sign under bar. Okay. But now in version 3, you can make it read a little bit nicer. And you can say dollar sign PS item. And so you can refer to it as a PS item. And so that's a little bit nicer. But wait, in fact, in PowerShell version 3, we make it even simpler. So first, these squiggle brackets are a little bit odd. And this PS item. So in version 3, I can just say get process where working set greater than 30 megabytes. Okay? And so again, we're working to make it simpler and simpler for you to be able to think about what you want, type and get it. Now here, this will only work for simplistic things, okay? It won't work for more complex things. So for instance, you know, where there's a compound here, I could have said, hey, I want them where it's greater than 30 megabytes, minus and dot name match, let's see, yeah, match, what were some of those objects? Okay, D, and match D star, two. What? Oh, process name. I'm screwing it up. Anyway, the point is that you can have rich, complex things. And so that actually brings me to the point of where. Let's talk about where. One of the most important, in fact, I refer to it as the queen of commandlets. It's one of the most powerful things, queen like as in chessboard queen, one of the most powerful things on the board. Where is incredibly powerful. I started off where and gave it to one of the engineers, and I said, hey, because these are objects, we want to do effectively SQL against objects. Right? We want SQL operators against live objects. So write me that. And this guy, what a jerk. I mean, he spent like 3 months and he hadn't implemented all of SQL. Well, I mean, what the heck? And it turns out there's a reason why SQL has like 1,000 guys on that team. Turns out SQL's hard. And so anyway, after about 3 months, you know, he had had a small subset and it was different and it was funky and it was clear that this just was the wrong approach. And so we threw it away and we replaced it with 3 lines of code that is effectively far, far more powerful than SQL. What? 3 lines of code more powerful than SQL. How could that possibly be? I'm absolutely serious. And so let me explain how where works. So this thing here, let's bring it up here. Let's make it simple. Which one do I have? Oh, what did I do? Okay, so what we do, the way where works is we get an input object, we get an object from the pipeline, we assign it to a variable, dollar sign underbar, and you see those squiggle brackets? Those squiggle brackets are something we call a script block. Now a script block is basically PowerShell language, right? It's PowerShell code. And what we do is we take that object, assign it to a variable, and we execute that code. And if that code executes and evaluates to true, we take the object and we pass it on. If it evaluates to false, we don't. We throw it away. And that's simple 3 lines of code. Assign to a variable, execute the string. If it's true, pass it on. If it's false, throw it away. Okay, those three lines of code are more powerful than SQL. Let me prove it to you. By the way, notice I said we execute the code. Notice the code doesn't have to have anything to do with that dollar sign underbar. Okay, I'll prove it to you. Get process pipe to where dollar sign true, right? I didn't say you had to use dollar sign underbar. And so what that did was it evaluated, but I'm going to reduce this to make it a little clearer. I'm going to say star SS, okay? So there we got all the processes that began ended with SS. We passed this, and every time we ran it, it evaluated to true, so we passed every single object on. But I could have said, hey, dollar sign false. And none of them get passed on. Okay, so those two are not particularly useful. It's more useful when you use the dollar sign under bar. But the point I'm trying to make here is that we just execute that code. That code can be anything. Okay, that code is typically an expression using dollar sign under bar. It's typically dollar sign under bar dot name, contains a C. Oh, I screwed that up again. Match C. Okay, so it's typically some expression like that. But the reality is it can be anything. It can be a full script. It can be a 10-line script. It can be a 100-page script. That script can call out to Active Directory. It can look things up in SQL. It can call your mother and ask her what you should do. Okay, let's see how that. You think I'm joking, don't you? I'm not. Read host minus prompt. Hey, mom, should I pass CSS RSS on? No. Should I pass? Oh, I said no. Oh, you know what? Evaluates to true. Should I pass this? No. This? No. This? Yes. Okay? So you can do anything you want in those scripts. Where is worth spending some time on? It is one of the most powerful things going. Okay? So the pipeline. Lots and lots of fun. Now, there's two ways this pipeline works. By value and by instance. So by instance, that says, hey, if I want to, let's say I've got calc, let's get some calculators going here. Calc, okay? So when I do get process calc, I get three of these things. And I can pipe that to stop process. And stop process can take something called an input object, which is of type System.diagnostic.process, which is to say the output of get process, and it will just work, right? And to prove that to you, I'll show you. And so what happens is the output of the get binds to the parameter input object, and it'll process it, okay? But there's another way to do things, and the other way to do things is by value, sorry, by property name. And so here what I'll do is, let's see, process name calc. Here, I'll do this. Process name comment. Okay, so I just created a CSV file, and so cat t1.csv, comma separated value, and so I'll import that CSV, CSV path t1. Okay, so there. So now I have a comma separated value file, right, like an Excel spreadsheet. And what I'm going to do is notice that stop process, well, actually, I'll do it this way. Imagine I wanted to find out about the parameters of stop process. I'd say get help stop process minus parameter process name. Name. Okay, and we have to change that. Okay, so you can say stop process minus name calc, what if, and it will try and delete those things, or try and remove those things. But notice here it says, hey, that the parameter name accepts pipeline input by property name. Okay. What that means is it will accept any object on the pipeline that has a property called name. It will take that name and it will use it and to delete the process. Okay? So again, we did here was we import this thing. Oh, I got it wrong. Sorry. We import this. I now have one object with a property name called calc, and I can pipe it to stop process. And it'll work. So what this means is it gives you a lot of flexibility to be able to get your objects from Active Directory, from SQL, from comma-separated values, from anywhere, and bind. And this helps you with this thing type get world. What happened was, if you actually take a look at a lot of scripts, what they do is they do something, and then you see a lot of this. You see a lot of things where, you know, you parse a file or you do something, and you say, you know, $ name equals blah, 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 something. And then you see something that says stop process pipe to, or minus name, $ name. And this pattern of dash parameter using $ parameter, you know, dash name, $ name, made me think that, hey, why don't we use the parameters of the command to parse the incoming object? Okay, so where they match, we grab those values, we bind, and we execute. And this gives you just great, great, great power. Right? So for instance, let's have some fun here. Get sim instance minus class, oh, class name, Win32 BIOS. Okay, so let's see. Let's say class name, Win32 BIOS, Win32 computer system, Win32 operating system. I'm sure I've spelled something wrong there. Well, we're going to find out. Import CSV, SFT. Okay, then pipe that to get sim instance. See, I knew I spelled it wrong. Anyway, before I spelled it wrong, I got some things right. There's a computer name and the BIOS information. Computer system, operating system. I get that one. Thank you. Takes a community. That's awesome. There it is. Okay, so we went and grabbed each one of those objects. By the way, this is crazy powerful stuff, because let's see if I can actually do this. I've connected to my, I've got a VPN back to Redmond, so this might work, might not work. Computer name, I'll say dot, and then I'll use my GPS I7H8. See if this works. Oh, okay, that's all my local one. And then maybe, oh, there you go, and then it gets it from the remote machine. So I pipelined a set of classes that I want, and on the parameter, I went and got all the, you know, specified a bunch of computer names. So you can connect the dots between that and some really powerful stuff. Okay, so the pipeline, powerful, powerful stuff. Now, yes, oh, love it, question. Does the pipeline allow multiple input parameters? Yes, it does. So basically, the algorithm is this. Okay, so this looks like a traditional command line shell. It is not. It is the farthest thing from a traditional command line shell you can get. There's an incredible amount of sophisticated technology within PowerShell. The reality is that PowerShell is a data flow engine, or it's actually modeled after a data flow engine. It is an object flow engine. So what happens is when you type A, pipe to B, pipe to C, what happens is we take each one of those commands, they map to an execution unit, and then we set up this complex data flow diagram. We pass control to the first element, it runs until it outputs an object. The PowerShell then takes a look at that object, and it takes a look at the next element in the execution graph. And PowerShell does whatever it takes to make that work. And the process is, we say, hey, I take a look at the parameters, and those parameters articulate its data contract that it requires. We find the things that first say bind by value. And we say, hey, is this the same object as this guy needs? And if so, we bind it to it and we go. And if not, we then look at the other parameters and we say, are there any that do bind by name? And for all the ones that bind by name, we say, is there a property by that name? And if so, we grab it and we bind it, grab it and bind it, grab it and bind it. We'll do it for each of the parameters that have by property value. By the way, the property here might require a date time, and it might have the value, it might have the name, the property name, but the value is a string. And so what we'll do is we'll do whatever data coercion, data caching, data conversion required to meet that data contract to bind to it. So yes, you can bind multiple properties. And thanks for the question. Where is it? Okay, Sim. In the past, we talked a lot about WMI, and now we talk a lot about SIM. So what's going on there? And the answer is WMI is an implementation of the DMTF standards, the SIM standards. However, WMI was started like 15 plus years ago, and it implemented a very early version of the standards, and it did it over DCOM. Okay, so in this release, we made a major investment in standards-based management. You might have seen me talk about this. This is all because of our shift to being a cloud OS. Being a cloud OS, we need to manage a lot of heterogeneous things, and we're going to do that through SIM and WSMAN, the DMTF standards. And so we needed to come up to speed with the latest standards, and so there were some changes. And we shift from DCOM to WSMAN as the primary protocol. So now all servers ship with WSMAN on by default, so the remoting is on by default. So any of you, whoever, you know, you've been using PowerShell and tried to get your security guys to turn on WSMAN, and they said, no opening of ports, you now win, right? You can just tell them, Jeffrey says you have to do it. Because indeed, we ship it now on by default. And so we've come up to the latest things, and the WMI commandlets are still there, but they work against DCOM. The SIM commandlets work against WSMAN, and then optionally against DCOM, okay? And the big benefit is the WMI commands work against Windows machines. The SIM commands will work against Windows machines and heterogeneous machines. So if you saw my foundation session modernizing the data center, I use these SIM commandlets to talk to a raw hardware machine, right? So I don't know if you know this, but most servers and most laptops now have these base motherboard controllers where even if there's no OS in there, even if you take the disk out, you can still talk and power it off, you can still manage it. I mean, really, I don't know if you've seen that. It's crazy, right? You pull out the disk, you turn the machine off, and you can still like talk to it and say, hey, tell me what your information is. You can still set information. That's because it's implemented the DMTF standards in the hardware itself. So these SIM commandlets will talk to that. They'll talk to Windows. And then we showed OMI, it's an open source version of WMI, running in an Arista switch. And the same SIM commandlets will talk to it. So SIM, good stuff. Okay. Oh, by the way, so one of the benefits of WSMAN is it runs over HTTP. Okay, and so the benefits of that is that it knows how to traverse proxies. It's very sophisticated. If in order to talk to that machine, you have to go through that proxy, and that proxy requires a different set of credentials than that machine, we have mechanisms to support all of that. Now, in general, you're not going to have to deal with that, and you don't even want to know about it. But what you should know is that if you have a complex environment, PowerShell in WSMAN is there to support you. Now, we go over HTTP, but we do not use port 80. And some people have asked me about that, like, hey, what's the deal there? Why don't you go over port 80? And originally, we were over port 80, and we were absolutely convinced that this was safe, right? We knew that this was going to be an attack point for lots of hackers and all the bad guys, and so we went and invested quite heavily. You know, we fully embrace the secure design properties, this secure development lifecycle model, and we had external penetration testers in, test. But then at some point we realized that that basically humans are involved, right? That at some point someone's going to then configure the system, and they have the potential to misconfigure it. So imagine you've got a bunch of IIS servers out there that all, by definition, are available via port 80. If the management port's available by port 80, then you made a misconfiguration, then you expose your system. Now, you might want to make your machines manageable over the internet, but in general, probably not. And so we said, hey, we're going to use a different port. I think it's 50, I don't know, some other number. And therefore, we use HTTP going to that port. And therefore, if you misconfigure it, it's not a big deal. Most people will not have that port exposed to the internet. And if you do, you can do that. You punch a hole through the internet, just make sure you configure things properly. So a lot of focus in on security and depth, secure in depth. Okay, so let's talk about remoting. So imagine, so what is it I'm doing here, right? What I've done is I've created a PowerShell session and I'm working with it, right? I'm interacting with it. But imagine I wanted to enter into a PowerShell session for another machine. How might I enter a PowerShell session for another machine? You. I like that guy. Yes, enter PS session minus computer name. Remember I said computer name, learn the parameters because we're going to use them over and over again. APSI7H8. And this is across, this is back in Seattle. The latencies kind of suck, so this will take a few seconds. Hopefully not a few minutes. Okay, so notice the prompt changed, right? So now the prompt is telling me I'm on a different computer. And just to prove that, host name, right? And now I can do, get sims instance, Win32 computer system. And I see that I'm on that machine. So now this is like a very secure form of Telnet or SSH. It's our version of SSH. You're interactively talking to that machine over there. And that works out great, yeah? However, I'll exit. Sometimes I want to talk to multiple machines. And so if I want to talk to multiple machines, I can establish a session. So imagine I wanted to invoke a command against multiple machines. Like I do that invoke command on computer name dot and JPSI7H88 and a script block host name. And so what this is doing is it's invoking the command host name on computer names local and then this remote, and it just works. Okay. Now notice that took a while. Why did it take a while? And the answer is when we do an invoke command and you specify the computer name, we create a TCP IP connection, we start up a process. That process then loads the CLR and then it loads PowerShell. It initializes both of those, grabs the command, executes it, gets the results, transfers them back to the local system, and then throws everything away. Okay? So that's fine, but it's a little bit heavyweight. And if you're just going to get one piece of information, that is the correct technique. If you're going to go get multiple pieces of information, that is the wrong technique. If you want to do multiple configurations, you'll do something like have a variable, and you'll create a new PS session to computer name dot JPSI7H8. Okay? So you'll create sessions to those, and you'll put those sessions into a variable. $S. Okay, so now it shows me that I've got two sessions to these machines. And you recall how long it took here. So instead of computer name, I'm going to say PS session. Session. And it happens much faster. Okay? So, very nice remoting. And so what this allows me to do is to do fan out. Now with that computer name, you could have specified 10, 100, 100,000 machines. No, seriously. And what we do is we have very intelligent networking, right? So if you do it to say 10,000 machines, we have three queues. The to-do queue, 10,000. The in-progress queue, we have a default, what we call a throttle limit, I believe of 32, and then there's the done. And so what we do is you take 10,000 and you take the first 32 and you start executing requests against them. As one finishes, we take it off that list, put it in the done, and we grab another one off this list and start a process for that. And so what we do with this Toronto limit is walk through. It's like a window walking through all the systems. So this means that, one, your network's not abused, your machine's not abused. You can control how quickly and how much you want to access things. So it's very, very powerful. Now, what happens when I run a remote command? Literally what happens, so let's do this. Let's do it to just one. Okay, so invoke command. Get process *ss. Okay. So notice that when I run this, we have a new field, PS computer name. So what happens is we execute the code, we get the objects back, and then we tag them with where they came from. And this facilitates debugging so that you always know where you got information from. But notice it still looks like text. It's not text. Remember I said we lie to you a lot? A lot of things look like text, but they're not. In fact, what's coming back is an object. And so if I wanted to get that, get member. Okay. So what's really coming back from that remote execution is a deserialized system diagnostic process. And look here, it's got all the properties and their types. Okay, so what's that mean? That means that you can do things like get these where handles greater than 20 megabytes. Oh, handles. Sorry. That would be very bad if you had that many handles. We're working sets greater than 20 megabytes. Okay. Let's change this to 10. And then say sort by working set and format as a table working set and process name minus auto. Okay. So it's, you get the objects back. Even though you're working remotely, you get the objects back. You're able to process those and have lots of fun with them, okay? And lots of power. Now, again, some people get hung up on this notion of an object-oriented shell. The reality is objects simplify things, okay? So how many of you work with Excel or have seen know what Excel is, okay? Well, think of objects as like an Excel spreadsheet. Right, an Excel spreadsheet, each object would be a row, and the properties would be like the columns. Okay, that's really all it is. In fact, let's think about this. Let's say I've got get service. Okay, and I say get member. Member. Okay, so here are all the properties. Okay, and to prove to you it's just like an Excel spreadsheet, I can do this. Export CSV. Okay, and so it in fact is an Excel spreadsheet. Okay, so I took those objects and I exported them as an Excel spreadsheet. So here are all the names. Here is the, somewhere here is the status. Okay, and having done that, I can then say, remember it was get service, or I can say import CSV and get the objects back. Okay, so don't get hung up on this notion of objects. Objects are really just sort of a collection of properties, like an Excel spreadsheet. Okay. Now, once you have these objects, you want to spend some time on the object utilities. This is the power of PowerShell. And those will often have the characteristic get command. They'll have the noun object. Okay? You'll want to spend some time on these things. This is what gives you incredible power. So you can compare objects, you can do for each, you can do group measure, new, select, sort, t, where. So let's think about that. You can do get process. Let's do this. Get. Let's do this. I'm going to switch here a second. Here. Let's do a dir. Right? Lots of stuff. I'll do get member. And notice there's something here called get member extension. So what I can do is I can do a dir and group them by a property called extension, right? Okay, so that's pretty cool, except it's kind of disorganized. So what I'd like to do is then sort it by count, sort by the property count. And that's great, except I don't want all the stuff at the beginning. So what I'd like to do is I'd like to select the last 10. Okay, so these are the things you can do. Oh, I should have mentioned, sorry. In fact, what's going on here, select, this is select object. This is sort object. And this is group object. Okay, when the noun is object, it's optional. And it just reads a little smoother. You can just drop the dash object. And so you can see there's some crazy powerful stuff here. Like, let's take compare, right? Let's do this one. C temp. Let's do $P equals get process. Okay? So $P now contains a snapshot of the processes at this point in time. Okay? So then, let's do calc and notepad. Okay, so I created two new things. And now I'll say $P2 equals get process. Okay, so now imagine I can compare $P1 for P with $P2. Okay, so I took two collections of objects. I took two snapshots of the processes. And now I can compare them, and I can see, yes, P2, being the second one, the side indicator, says P2 has these two objects that P1 didn't. Okay, so you're able to compare objects. Crazy powerful stuff. Crazy powerful stuff. Because in general, that's the way admins, like, figure out problems, right? What's a bad state? Well, a bad state's a deviation from a good state. Right? So, like, this reminds me of a story when I was growing up. My brother, a little kid, right, he falls in the tub and he hurts his arm, right? And so he thinks he broke his arm. And so the parents are like, no, you're fine. Every time they touch his arm, he screams. And so, like, oh, okay, this isn't good. So they bring him to the emergency room, and I think he broke his arm. So they go and they take a bunch of x-rays, and the doctor looks at the x-rays and he's like, no, it looks fine. But every time he examines the kid's arm, my brother screams at the top of his lungs. And so he's thinking, well, let's take some different x-rays. Let's take it, you know, move the arm this way and take some different ones. Maybe it's hiding something. And he's looking at those x-rays and he's like, Stephen, how high can you lift your arm? My brother says, only this high. He said, no, that's not good. He said, before you fell, how high could you lift your arm? He says, all the way up here. So I love that story. It's a true story. The thing about it is that's how often we do things as administrators, right? Well, hey, what's bad? Well, bad is a deviation from good. So if something's not working, compare it against something that's working well, and the difference is probably something there. Now here we did a difference against live objects, but often you don't have live objects. Like when did you know to take the snapshot? And did you leave it hanging around? Like, did you leave this process object hanging around? And the answer is, well, maybe not. So what you probably do is you probably do something like, I want to get the processes, and then I want to export it as a CSV to process, or let's say, good process.csv. Okay? And now here, I'm going to delete all these calcs, right? So you might want to do a compare. Okay, now, you Unix guys are going to get this. Whenever you use PowerShell, you can say, I want to provide you a parameter, and I want you to get this parameter by running another command. So run another command and take its output and use it as an input here. And the way we do that is called command substitution, and you put things in parentheses. Okay? So instead we said compare $P1 and $P2. Here what we're going to say is, I want you to run two commands and use them to compare one another. So the first one I'm going to do is I'm going to run import CSV goodprocess.csv, and then I'm going to run get process. Okay, so I'm going to run two commands, and then I'm going to compare their output, compare their objects. And look at that, it's a mess. And why? And the answer is, well, yeah, you're comparing a comma-separated value against a live object. That's never going to work. What you really want to do is to not compare them by identity. You want to compare their properties. Compare the names. Oh, look at that. So you're able to compare objects of wildly different types by specifying their names. Now, if you want, now you can get crazy. You can say, hey, I'd like to do that and their working set. And notice that doesn't work because the working set is constantly changing, right? So you ready for this one? You can specify, let's see if I did this right. You can say, I want to get the working set divided by, let's say, 2 megabytes. And, let's see here. Is it expression? Let's see, int dollar sign. There you go. So what that was, again, I could specify the property as a general rule, not always, but as a general rule, whenever you can specify a property, you can often specify a script in place. And the script will, you can assume that $_underbar is the name of the current object. Okay? So let's look at what I did here. Before I said I'd like to compare these objects based upon the name and the working set. And the list exploded because working set constantly changes, okay? And so I said, well, I don't really want the, I don't want to be too precise here. I just want to find those things that have, whose working set has changed a lot, okay? And so what I did was I want to compare it by the property name or, hey, grab the object, get its working set, and then divide it by 2 megabytes, cast that an integer, and if that number of differences is different, then evaluate the object and you'll output it. And so you're able to do these crazy powerful stuff with this. Yeah? Let me give you another example. Get process. Remember, we were able to do things like format table, the name and the working set. Okay? But you could go in here and you could say, hey, I'd like to provide an expression. And here, we're going to provide a hash table. We're going to say we want the label to be test and an expression to be name.toUpper. We'll just uppercase its name. Okay? So it's crazy powerful stuff. Okay? And so again, what you want to do is you want to learn these techniques. Again, Don Jones' book, PowerShell and a Month of Lunch, is a very good thing. You spend an hour a day learning these techniques, and then you explore. And that's the way you do it. You just explore and iterate, explore and iterate, explore and iterate. Okay? Last thing I want to show you is the notion of, we've showed you a lot about commands. Commands are these high-level task-oriented abstractions. It turns out not everything in the world lends itself well to a command. And there are other things like imagine you wanted to do the entire file system as commands, right? You'd say get directory, and then you have to provide the full path name every time. That doesn't work, right? And so there are these notions of drives or hierarchical stores. And what we do in PowerShell is we abstract that, right? So here we'll get PS drive. And notice, you see the traditional drives. There's the C drive and the D drive. But notice we've got these other drives, like HKLM. Like, what's an HKLM drive? And an alias and variable. Like, what the heck's that? And the answer is, they're drives. Okay? So just as I can say, you know, print working directory and dir in the file system, I can do CD HKLM software Microsoft print working directory. I'm in the registry. And when I do a dir, I can do a dir of the registry keys. I can do a dir W star. Okay? So now you're operating against the registry. I can do, check this out, this is craziness. Variable dir. I'm showing you the variables of PowerShell. I mean, don't believe me? Here, don't believe me. Look at this. $z equals. Right? $z. Dir. Okay? Crazy powerful stuff. And so then this works for things like Active Directory. You can cd into Active Directory. We've got a cert drive. Cert drive sometimes takes a while. We have wsman. Localhost, dir. So there's lots of things that we use these drives for to be able to show you additional information. And often you'll have a set of commandlets, like SQL uses this a lot. We have commandlets which are context sensitive, which is to say they'll operate against the objects in the current drive. So that pretty much sums up what it is I wanted to talk to you about. The key things I'd like to highlight are, you know, we are trying to drive to a world of think, type, get, a world presented to you as high-level task-oriented abstractions. And in the past, if you've ever tried PowerShell in the past, you know, previous version, PowerShell version 2, we had 230 commandlets, which really meant there were 230 things that you could think, type, and get. And after that, you know, roll up your sleeves, you got some programming to do. With Windows Server 2012, that is a radical change. We have embraced it and massively, in a massive way. There are over 2,400 commandlets in Windows Server 2012. So your ability to think, type, and get things on the system is unprecedented. And that's just within the OS. All the products at Microsoft now, with the exception of System Center Configuration Manager, ship with PowerShell commandlets support. And System Center Configuration Manager committed at Microsoft at the MMS conference this year to have full PowerShell coverage by the end of the year. So basically, every Windows server and tool product in the company now has full support for PowerShell. So it's a key, critical technology to do as an IT pro. Now, we'll continue to provide power GUIs. You know, we're not walking away from GUIs. If you saw our server manager, it's rich, beautiful, gorgeous. Clearly, we're investing heavily in Server Manager, but we're implementing our GUIs completely differently now. We layer our GUIs on top of PowerShell and on top of standards-based management so that anything you do in a GUI, you can also automate, right? You can automate those actions. You can have them happen. You can have them occur when an event occurs or on a schedule or across lots of machines. So we're trying to give you a world where you can automate your environment with high-level task-oriented abstractions using PowerShell. So thank you very much. I know it's very difficult to get up this early on after the party, and I appreciate your time. And remember to fill out your evaluation forms. We do pay attention to them.